I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, just after 3 o'clock in the nation's capital and beyond. It was just a weird, wild celebration over on the other side of the aisle. Our guy, Darris Dameron, apparently found out after all this time. He's the producer for Grant and Danny. Apparently found out all this time he was allergic to shellfish and fish. And now he's not allergic to shellfish anymore. He's still allergic to fish, but not allergic to shellfish. I've never heard of that. I've heard of allergic to shellfish. My daughter was for a large part of her young life and then tested out of it. But I've never heard of somebody that's not allergic to shellfish, but it's still allergic to fish. I don't get how that works. Anyway, joining us right now, let's get back to something we sort of know something about, is Sam Bruckhouse from SoomerSports.com. He's been all over the NFL trade deadline and more for, again, Soomer Sports. They do a great job breaking it all down, and we've been joined by Sean Syed and Thomas Dimitroff in weeks past. And, again, Sam with us here on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app here in D.C. Sam, it's Chris Russell. Thanks for your time. How are you?
Appreciate you. You know, we have a big Thursday night game coming up.
Yeah.
The Ravens and the Bengals, and we have a bunch of trades that are really exciting, especially for the Commanders as they go play the Steelers.
Absolutely. And you also do a Soomer Daily podcast, which is out, the latest episode just a couple of hours ago, available wherever you get your podcast, a Thursday night football preview. And obviously you have, again, trade deadline reaction and the end of an era in New Orleans. So before we get to the Thursday night game, obviously we'll tackle what is most interesting to our audience here in D.C., which is the acquisition of Marshon Lattimore. I have not heard your thoughts, so I apologize. Just so much going on. And I'm just trying to keep my head on a swivel. I like the trade. I don't know if I love it because he does have an injury history, but I as close to loving it without officially knowing that I love it, if that makes sense. Is that kind of your perspective or a different view?
Yeah, I'm going to try to pull you onto my side. I may be slightly biased. You know, I've watched a lot of Marshon Lattimore as a Saints fan from New Orleans, but here's why you should love it. Number one, he has been performing very well. Number two, the Commanders have a massive, massive hole at cornerback, and it is the clear, you know, dearth of their roster. And number three, the compensation was not exactly out of control. At Soomer Sports, we have a trade explorer tool that NFL teams utilize to see comparable trades when they're looking at guys like Marshon Lattimore. And our comparable was the Darius Slay trade from 2020. We had a third-round pick and a fifth-round pick for that player. Marshon Lattimore, they gave out a third-round pick, a fourth-round pick, and a sixth-round pick, but they get back a fifth round in return. And Marshon Lattimore, you know, is a little younger. He has that all-pro pedigree. All three of those things, in my mind, make it a very good trade for the Commanders.
Yeah, and I probably misrepresented. I get a little leery when somebody has consistent injuries, might be strong, but, you know, does have a little bit of an injury history, right? So I get a little bit worried about that. Everything else I love, and I love the comparison that you made to the Darius Slay trade. Again, SoomerSports.com is where you can get some of this information and much more, and, of course, the podcast, as we just mentioned. So let me just bring it from my perspective. I agree with, again, everything you just said. We had a discussion, my co-host and I, yesterday. Now, his contention was that Marshon Lattimore most directly and quickly affects and improves the Commanders' run defense because they can drop a safety into the box. They've been playing a lot of too high. They've been getting bludgeoned on the ground, what have you. And I'm of the thought, man, you get a four-time Pro Bowl corner, you don't have a number one lockdown until this dude. That's his number one job. And then whatever else he brings run defense-wise is whatever else he brings run defense and whatever impact he has in that area. How do you kind of meet those two things out?
Yeah. During his time with the Saints, Lattimore was just absolutely, you know, he was the mirror of the best player. He was the guy who you put on the Mike Evans of the world or the Julio Jones way back in the day, and he would just follow them around and try to section off that part of the field. So I can definitely see how, you know, those safeties and those linebackers may be able to get more involved in the run game there. But to address kind of the injury point, like, again, like, he is very injury prone. He's had hamstring issues, a lot of soft tissue stuff, which is always frightening. But what Thomas Dimitroff, the president over there at Sumer Sports, he's the general manager of the Atlanta Falcons for years. He's a great mentor of mine. He likes to say, like, at the deadline, you want to give something that will definitely put you over the edge. And you got to say, you know, Marshawn Lattimore is such a big improvement over the cornerback play that they've been having. I think that's why it was a good move. And if he goes down with injury, you know, you're winning games with those guys. But this really elevates you to another level, specifically, as you said, because the whole field kind of gets sectioned off right by him. And it helps you both in the pass and the run.
Sam Brockhouse was, if I could speak in English, with us. You want to do my job for me? No. Sam Brockhouse is with us from SumerSports.com. Again, check out Sumer Daily with Sam. Podcast available now wherever you get your podcast. Latest one up about tonight's Thursday night game, which we'll get to in a wee little bit. All right, so you mentioned, you know, you are in the Louisiana area. You've watched a lot of Marshawn Lattimore. I think a lot of us have, but not as closely as you. From a fabric, I guess, fitting in the fabric kind of standpoint, personality, I've heard he's quiet. I heard he was a little disgruntled, obviously, with New Orleans. Do you think he'll be he doesn't have any more guaranteed money on his contract. Do you think he'll be any sort of a problem in those areas?
I wouldn't say he would be a problem, and here's kind of why, just to bring it back kind of to the field, but that culture that Dan Quinn likes to bring, particularly on the defense, mm-hmm. kind of bleeds onto the field. He likes to be up in your face, and he likes to be, you know, on the bleeding edge of blitzing. We saw that with the Cowboys last year with some of the stars they had, and that is the guy that Marshawn Lattimore is. He's going to be man-to-man coverage. He's going to be in your face. He's going to be jamming you at the line. And I suspect he'll fit in quite well to that culture that Dan Quinn already wants to have. And as you mentioned, playing a lot of too high, hasn't been able really to build up that kind of attacking defense due to the problems at cornerback.
Any idea how serious this hamstring injury? I'm not asking you to be a doctor or a medical trainer, but do you think this was a little gamesmanship, both on Lattimore's part and maybe the Saints' part, to kind of hold him off last Sunday? Or do you think it's legit and, like, there's a legitimate chance that, you know, maybe he doesn't play this Sunday against the Steelers, maybe even next Thursday against A.J. Brown and the Philadelphia Eagles?
I'm an old player. I played football at Tulane. So when it comes to injuries, I'm always for a player. I always think, you know, they're working hard in the training room, trying to get them back to full strength.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, like, when it comes to soft tissue injuries, they're kind of in that, you know, place where they're not really going to get better until they get better.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen him miss a lot of games, even when the Saints were very competitive as well throughout the years. And so it's definitely something to keep an eye on, specifically as he gets older, specifically given his play style, and specifically given how competitive the upcoming games they need him to perform at.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Sam Brockhouse, SumerSports.com, with us. So from a Saints perspective, I've always been curious by this organization. From the outside, let me set it up like this. I understand when you have a Drew Brees, you do whatever it takes, you know, franchise quarterback, blah, 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 the money, cap, whatever. I got it. And I understand a lot of their cap issues are probably as a result of that, but I can't definitively draw, maybe like you can. So I'll ask again, I'll paint with a broad brush, and you tell me where I'm right, wrong. It just seems like they have managed the salary cap. And again, maybe a lot of that is because of Brees and Michael Thomas as well. It seems like they've managed the cap just to survive and to barely get under and to not be able to make improvements and to not be able to hold on to their guys like Terron Armstrong and Marcus Williams and guys like that over the years. Is that the right approach for me, or is it just like, hey, they've done what they've had to do to keep as long of the window open as possible and it just hasn't worked for various reasons?
The way the NFL typically, you know, tries to set up their stuff, at least in their negotiations with the Players Association and their television rights deals, is to increase parity. That is the name of the game when it comes to the NFL. They're one of the true leagues where anyone can win on any given weekend, and there's good players on every team. You know, you look at the NBA, I know y'all were just talking about Corey Kispert and how, you know, they may be in a, are they tanking? Are they not tanking? Like, that doesn't really happen mm-hmm. in the NFL until about week 8. And it's because of the things like the salary cap. The salary cap in the NFL can be manipulated a million different ways. And the whole goal, really, of it is when you have a ton of good players on your team, you will not be able to keep them, and thus those good players go to other teams. And when you look at what the Saints did during the, you know, middle of the 2010s, they just hit crazily on their draft picks. You know, they had one draft where they drafted Alvin Kamara, Marshawn Lattimore,
yeah.
Trey Hendrickson, Alex Anzalone, and I can't even remember all the names. And all of those guys are, you know, Ryan Ramczyk was another one, were in like all pro or Pro Bowl conversations and still kind of are to this day. And when you add that on top of a team that already had Cameron Jordan in all pro, you mentioned Taron Armstead in all pro, Drew Brees in all pro, it's just extremely hard to keep them, and you have to make a decision of, are we going to let these guys walk, which is, you know, kind of what a team like the Rams have done in past years, where, you know, they have a real down year because they kind of try to reset their salary cap, and then they bring a bunch of guys back. We kind of saw them do that this year on the defensive side of the ball,
mm-hmm.
but they've ended up having some young players play really well. But what the Saints decided to do was really try to stretch that out as long as possible, basically like they had a credit card debt and they were rolling it up, and now it's time to pay that debt, and now it comes time to kind of reconcile with the past, you know, 7 to 8 years of them having a bunch of good players and kind of the brain drain that inevitably had to happen as a result of that.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sam Brockhouse, SoomerSports.com with us. Again, check out Soomer Daily, available where podcasts are downloaded. Latest Thursday Night Football preview. We'll get there in a sec. The Steelers are in Washington this weekend, and they've come off the bye. We know they added to their defense with Preston Smith, their offense and wide receiver group, which they've been trying to address all offseason and throughout the first part of the season with Mike Williams and Russell Wilson. Like, I thought Russell Wilson should have been the starter from the get-go when everybody was screaming about Justin Fields and whatever. I'm not a big Justin Fields guy, I got to be honest with you. I'm not saying I'm a big Russell Wilson fan, but I thought that would have been the right move. Then he gets hurt, and then he misses the first 6 weeks, and then Mike Tomlin controversially goes back to Russell Wilson when they're still winning. How did you kind of sort all that out on your end, and are you surprised that they haven't skipped a beat, and if not, gotten better since Russ has taken over?
Yeah, so at the beginning of the year, I was kind of on the opposite side of you. I was pro Justin Fields, and the reason why is I looked at Russell Wilson playing in that kind of precision passing game that mm-hmm. Sean Payton likes to run with the Denver Broncos, and what I saw was him kind of losing production due to sacks and having a low average depth of target and just not really being able to contribute at a level, and that's why they decided to let him go and why he's on basically a very cheap contract for the Steelers. And I thought that was kind of the player that he was. And I thought, you know, maybe he had lost that deep ball ability and the ability to make contested throws that he had while he was in the Seahawks. And so I thought Justin Fields was the way to go just because he was so mobile, and that gives you a lot more to do in the running game. And they really did build up that running game. Najee Harris is having one of his best years of his career. But what I didn't realize is they wanted to get back to that old school play action deep ball game, and I think that's why they traded for Mike Williams. They now have two players who, you know, George Pickens has shown it this year. We haven't seen it much from Mike Williams in one of those precision style passing games with Aaron Rodgers, but Mike Williams is one of those true contested ball guys that you chunk it up to, and he's more of a power forward, and he goes up and gets it. And I think that's why Russell Wilson has been successful, and it'll be very interesting to see, obviously, Marshawn just getting there, but they're going to test these corners, and they're going to test them deep. The offense will of the Steelers. And I think this is going to be a very interesting matchup that will show us the returns, both of the Marshawn Lattimore trade hand of the Mike Williams trade very quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. I know you're working on something right now, so I don't want to exactly reveal, but the All-Pro roster, SoomerSports.com, and I know you're high on Jaden Daniels, go figure, as everyone else is. When you look at Jaden Daniels going against, again, T.J. Watt and Highsmith on the other side, now Preston Smith, and we'll see with that, and Hayward and what have you, what do you think the best way to attack the Pittsburgh defense is? Because the last time we saw the Steelers on Monday night a week and a half ago, Tyron Tracy and the Giants ran on them, but I kind of, maybe I'm crazy, I kind of sense like a big screen game, a big running back screen game, maybe going over the pass rush on the edges here, so maybe you don't have to hold up as much in coverage. How do you kind of see it, and how would you maybe visualize an offensive attack for the Commanders?
This is a very complex problem, and to be frank, I consulted my friend Sean Syed, who I believe you've had on the show, Stats and Scheme podcast, great. And he's more of a film guy than I. I'm definitely a numbers guy and kind of a locker room guy in terms of my experience. And I asked him the same question. I'm looking at their statistics, and I'm like, how do you attack this team? You have Highsmith, and you have T.J. Watt up in your face. Cameron Hayward is having another All-Pro year. You got Patrick Queen at the linebacker spot, Minka Fitzpatrick at the safety spot. What he highlighted, actually, was those cornerbacks. And I looked up some of their statistics. They're doing pretty good in coverage, but as you noted, they're struggling a little bit in terms of the run defense. And when they're struggling a little bit in the run defense, you really want to get it on the outside, and that's Cliff Kingsbury's MO. I could see a lot of screens, but I could also see them testing with, you know, those kind of three-step drop, let it rip to Terry McLaurin, and try to get over on those cornerbacks. I think that's probably the hole in this defense right now, but I will note it's not much of a hole. And that's why this Steelers defense is winning games for that team, despite all the quarterback controversy.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Sam Bruckhouse from SoomerSports.com with us. Before we run out of time, I mentioned the Thursday night game. Now, the last time these two teams got together, Cincinnati and Baltimore, obviously, in Cincinnati, went overtime. They did a pretty good job against Derrick Henry until that last big run. I think it was 50 yards or whatever. Joey B had, I think, four or five passing touchdowns. What do you expect tonight in Baltimore? But this Ravens team, in some ways, is still the same. I mean, they're great. They're great on offense. I think we all know that. But they are still a little bit shaky on the back end while being dominant up front in terms of stopping the run.
Yeah, you highlighted it well. This is a true weakness-on-weakness game when it comes to the defense. Now, T. Higgins was announced as doubtful. I haven't seen an update today of whether he'll be in, and Joe Burrow has been substantially better when T. Higgins is in the lineup. Now, he's been pretty darn good when T. Higgins is out, but it's been like basically from a good starter to an MVP-type player when T. Higgins is in, and that Ravens defense has some real holes. Marlon Humphrey's been playing pretty well, but the other items, Kyle Hamilton, obviously a good player as well, but the coverage has been really shaky. They're one of the worst teams in terms of the passing expected points added and efficiency in the league right now. And then you look at the Bengals defense on the other side. They've kind of gotten it together in the last couple weeks. They haven't played super difficult talent in the past 4 weeks. They've kind of put it together, but the run defense is really struggling. And Trey Hendrickson, who's the sack leader right now, in particular, has been more of a pass rush specialist this year. He hasn't performed super well in the run game either. What I'm looking for in the kind of the matchup I highlighted was that left side of the offensive line, McCary, Ronnie Stanley, you add in Patrick Ricard blocking. Are they going to just attack Trey Hendrickson in that old school kind of style I formation with Derrick Henry and just try to take him out of the game by forcing him to defend the run every play, and then obviously mix in some of that Lamar Jackson read option, making him have to make decisions. I'll be really interested. I think that's the way I would attack the Bengals defense. I think if they're able to run on the Bengals defense, I think this is certainly a Ravens game here.
Sam, last thing for you. I appreciate your time. Again, we want to direct everybody to SoomerSports.com for all of your great coverage, the podcast. Follow you on Twitter/X at Bruckhouse Sports. We put it up, obviously, on the timeline so you can easily follow it. My partner and I yesterday had kind of a discussion, argument, whatever you want to call it, about where the Commanders fit in the hierarchy of the NFC. And I said, I think they could play and probably beat anyone but Detroit. And he was convinced that Philadelphia is better, Green Bay is better, Detroit's better, and maybe even San Francisco now that C-Mac is coming back. Where are you on that particular issue? If I asked you, like, do you think the Commanders could beat anyone, or is it limited to just certain ones of those teams?
Yeah, it's a funny year because despite all of the breakout seasons we're seeing, I'm really only confident about three teams to be true Super Bowl contenders at this point. You highlighted the Lions. I think the Chiefs and the Ravens certainly are in that boat as well with how they're playing. The NFC is going to be very interesting. I am not a big believer in the 49ers, and you know, it'll be interesting. We were told it was an Achilles injury. Christian McCaffrey's the X factor for them. We've seen that in the past 8 weeks, 9 weeks. From them kind of having some up and down struggles. I don't know how well he'll look, and they have a bunch of guys who are injury prone out there. I think the really only one I really want to highlight as, you know, in that tier outside of the NFC North, which has a bunch of good teams, is the Rams. You know, they started off really slow. They started off really slow last year. They now have Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua back. They're a juggernaut on offense. One of the best offenses, frankly, of all time when they have all three of those guys playing, plus Kyron Williams.
Kyron Williams is awesome, yeah.
Yeah, but their defense really, like, was one of the worst defenses first half of the season up until now. The second half, they've been incredible. One of the best defenses in the league, despite playing some pretty stiff competition. And really, who it's about Jared Verse and it's about Braden Fisk, the rookies.
Two FSU guys.
Massively. Yeah. Two FSU guys. I love that FSU team. I compare them to the Villanova team that we now see in the NBA with Brunson and Bridges.
Oh, yeah.
Some kind of under-the-radar guys were Fisk and Verse, you know, coming into Florida State before they came first and second-round picks. They made a huge difference. That defense is now good. I really love the Rams, and I'm excited for their outlook.
You know, I kind of forgot to include them in that mix. That's a really, really, really good point. And, you know, Sean McVay has gone on to much bigger and better things, but, man, I covered him as a 22-year-old young assistant wide receivers coach and Mike Shanahan and Kyle Shanahan's first year here in Washington back in 2010. So, I mean, to see what that guy's done over the last 14, 15 years is just incredible. Sam, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate getting new. To converse with you. Excellent stuff on SoomerSports.com. We'll continue to point everybody to that, the podcast, all the work you guys do, and we appreciate you joining us and providing us some insight.
Appreciate y'all.
That is Sam Brookhouse of SoomerSports.com joining us on the BetQL guest hotline. Good spot there. When we return, we will tell you about Alex Ovechkin's pursuit of the great one. Because it took another step in the right direction last night on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. Stay with us.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.